a leper is healed, and his life would never be the same. That's next on The Balanced Word.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up, my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up, my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Discovering balanced living through the Word of God. This is The Balanced Word with our teacher, Dave Rolf. We're looking at various Bible stories contained in the Word, and today's is found in 2 Kings 5. Imagine having an incurable disease that would lead to you being an outcast in society, shunned by the world. Then all of a sudden you're healed. Well, that's exactly what happened to a man in our story today. Let's join Pastor Dave for all the details.
Turn in your Bibles to 2 Kings chapter 5. If you've been with us, you know that this year we are going through the entire Old Testament, pulling out certain key Bible stories and seeing what God teaches us through these stories that he recorded from thousands of years ago, because they're chock full of instructions for us about how we can live our lives. And so the story that we're looking at this morning is the story of a man named Naaman, who was a Syrian general who had leprosy. And he came and had an encounter with the prophet Elisha. Now, to get a little of the historical information to set the stage for this story, at this time, you know, after the days of Solomon, the nation of Israel split in two. And there was the tribe of Judah with the tribe of Benjamin in the south, and they were called Judah. And there was the other 10 tribes called Israel that were the northern tribes. Now, right away, of course, Jerusalem is in the south where Judah is. So the true worship was more consistent down there in Judah, whereas in the north, beginning with Jeroboam, they kind of defiled the worship, and their headquarters was kind of in Samaria, which is what we today call the West Bank, the west side of the Jordan River, the center of the nation, which is now much of it Palestinian territory. So their worship was more corrupt. But you trace through 1 and 2 Kings, you see the kings of Judah and the kings of Israel. And then in 1 and 2 Chronicles, it's just the kings of Judah. Well, what was going on by this time? When we get to 2 Kings chapter 5, the northern kingdom was already really starting to fall apart. They never really had a good king up there, but they had some great prophets. Elijah and Elisha both ministered up there. It must have been frustrating. You know, we talked about Elijah with a guy like Ahab and his wife Jezebel, and you know, it was tough. Well, Syria at this point was the nation that was the greatest threat to them. Syria was where it is today, on the northeast edge of Israel, where Damascus is and all that. And so they were running little raids and things. They hadn't actually tried to conquer Israel because, among other things, they were concerned that Judah would jump in to the fray, maybe get Egypt to pull in. So they ran little raids and things like that. Now later, as Assyria absorbed Syria, Assyria was the nation that actually came in and took the south, you know, the northern kingdom captive. And then it was, you know, years later when the Babylonians conquered the Assyrians and then came down and took Judah and destroyed the temple and all of that. So at this time, Syria's been threatening the northern tribes, and they would run periodic raids and capture people. The reason why that's important, well, you see it in the relationship between the king of Israel and the king of Syria, but also this Naaman, who was a high-ranking military officer for Syria, has a little Jewish girl who works as a servant in his house. And it tells us there in the beginning of chapter 5 that she had been captured on one of the Syrian raids of the northern part of Israel. So she's there in the house. This guy, Naaman, was a great guy. He was a great leader. The king really respected him. And well, if you look, chapter 5 of 2 Kings, beginning with verse 1. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, the king, because by him, the Lord, Yahweh, had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but a leper. So he had an understanding that God was judging his people and using them to do it. And so he's an honorable man doing his job, being faithful to the king of Syria. Now you might remember the king of Syria was anointed by Elijah the prophet after his experience there at Mount Sinai. So as you read on in the story, it says that, there in verse 2, the Syrians had gone out on raids and had brought back captive a young girl from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. So this girl was a special aid to Naaman's wife. As you read on in the story, the little girl sees that Naaman has leprosy, and you might know that leprosy, which today they call Hansen's disease, but it's a disease of the nervous system whereby you lose your sense of feeling. Your skin flakes and begins to fall off, but because you don't feel things, you have neuropathy. If you touch a hot stove, you just get burned and you don't realize it. And even in their day with all the little critters and varmints around, while you're sleeping, if a rat was eating your finger or your toes, you wouldn't even wake up. So it was an awful disease. It caused you ultimately to be isolated from everyone else. They didn't understand how it was transmitted and things like that. And so they tended to isolate you in leper colonies. It was a sad thing. So this little Jewish girl is talking to the lady that she worked for. And she goes, "Man, that's really too bad about Naaman, your husband, that he has leprosy. There's a guy down in Samaria," the northern, you know, it's the central part of Israel really today, the southern end of the northern tribes. "There's a guy down there who could heal him. Man, if only that guy could come here." And so this woman goes to Naaman. Maybe it's irritating to him. You know, it's like when you're sick and everybody has some remedy that they heard somewhere and you get all that, but he's like, "This would change my life. This leprosy is going to ruin my life, ruin my career and everything. If there's anybody down there, that would be great." So he goes through chain of command and he talks to his boss, the Syrian king. And he says, "I don't know if you have any influence, but I hear there's a guy in Samaria who can heal leprosy. I think you could put in a good word for me?" And the king says, "No problem. I'll write a note." And notice in verse 6, it says, well, after he got a bunch of silver and, you know, money, gold, and a bunch of changes of clothes, this note said, "Dear King of Israel," Jehoram was his name, "now be advised when this letter comes to you that I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy." Now, it's like, wait, the little girl said there's somebody in Samaria. She didn't say it was the king. So imagine you're the king, and here's a nation that you're really nervous about. You know, you just feel like they could roll over in bed and squash you. But, you know, you just come and go, okay, here's the deal. So the king's freaking out as you read through it. He's like, this has got to be a, what does he think, I'm God? That I can make people sick and make them well again? I'm a weak king of a weak nation. Syria is greater than us, and I'll bet they're just going to use this as their excuse to come swooping down and conquer us. You didn't heal my general, so I'm killing you. So he's freaking out, and he begins to tear his clothes and mourn. Now, I don't know if he did that in front of Naaman, but he probably just goes, "Yeah, I'll get right on it," and goes back, "Oh, no." He's just freaking out. Well, the word spreads, And Elisha hears that the king is like whining and crying and mourning. So he comes and goes, hey, what's the deal? What's going on? He said, oh, I think Syria's going to attack us. Because they sent a leprous general down here and told me to heal him. And I can't heal him. And Elisha goes, yeah, no problem. Send him to my house. So the king is probably thinking, okay, now it's your problem. Maybe they'll just kill you. So the king tells Naaman where Elisha lives and sends him down there with this whole, you know, group of soldiers. And he comes down there and he expects, you know, I'll meet Elisha. But Elisha doesn't even come out and meet him, which kind of offends Naaman. Elisha instead sends one of his servants out and says, so you got leprosy? Yeah. Go down in the Jordan River and dip yourself 7 times. The Jordan River is kind of scuzzy. I mean, every time I go there and do baptisms in the Jordan River, I kind of feel like I wonder what diseases I'm taking home. And, you know, it's just kind of muddy and murky. It's not like getting in your jacuzzi. But he goes, go dip 7 times. And Naaman just gets furious. He goes, what? This is ridiculous. And look at what he said. He went to the door. There in verse 10, Elisha sent a messenger out. Yeah, just go dip 7 times in the Jordan. You'll be fine. But verse 11, chapter 5 of 2 Kings, but Naaman became furious. And he went away and said, indeed, I said to myself, he shall surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Come on, there's rivers in Damascus that are better than this swamp. I could wash in them if that was what it was going to take to be clean. So he turned and went away in a rage. Naaman had already envisioned what was going to happen. The prophet Elisha is going to come out, and he's going to greet him personally. And he's going to stand there and, you know, welcome him. And then he's going to wave his hand over him and say the right words, and a miracle will happen. That's his expectation. But it's like he sends a servant out, and he tells me just go dip in the Jordan River? That's crazy. And he goes, forget it. I'm going back home. And as he's heading out to go back home, mad, no doubt now they will invade Israel because you got a mad general. His servants said to him, Naaman, wait a minute. They said, if this guy had given you some really complicated concoction, and a bunch of steps that you would have to do, climb a mountain over here, and at this time turn around 3 times. If he had given you something complicated, you would have done it, right? He goes, yeah. So what's it going to hurt to go dip in the River Jordan like he said? You know, then if it doesn't work, we kill him. Or at least you go back and go, that didn't work, and then he'll do it the way you thought he would, wave his hand over you in the name of Yahweh, will you? And so they talk sense to him. So Naaman goes, okay, fine. He certainly didn't have faith in the process. And a lot of times people are healed without having any faith in the Bible. But he had enough to go down there and dip in the water. And he's like, I'll show you. And he dips down the first time, still leprous. Stupid. Goes down a second time, still leprous. The 7th time, he dips in the water and he comes out and he's like, I've been healed. This is like crazy. All of a sudden, my whole life changes. I was probably going to lose my job. I was probably going to be alienated from my family. I was probably going to die in disgrace. And now, from this event, my life starts over. This is awesome. So he's so excited. He goes back to Elisha's house. And this time, Elisha came out. And Naaman said to him, I can't believe it. It worked. I went and dipped and look, I'm well, I'm healed. And so he says, I'm going to make you a rich man. I have all this gold and all this silver and all these outfits of clothes, and they're all yours. Elisha says, nah, just keep the stuff, keep the money. It's cool. I don't need anything. And he's like, what? He goes, no, really, I'm fine. I didn't do anything. I didn't even come out to meet you. God did it. So, you know, give credit to him, give glory to him. So then Naaman, who had just gone through the most amazing conversion where he realizes, wow, God, the God of Israel is a real God. In Syria, there's all kinds of gods, but this is the God who can touch me and make that difference in my life. So he tells Elisha, he says, and you know, you can read through this section if you'd like, but he tells him, from now on, I'm saying the only God is the God of Israel, and I'm going to worship him. And if you don't want my gold and silver and clothes, he said, can I take back a couple of wagons full of your dirt? Because the God that's here is special, and I'm going to worship your God, and I want to do it on Jewish soil, and so I'm going to take your dirt back. And then, interestingly enough, he goes, the only God I'm going to worship is your God, but I do have a job. And he said, my boss, the king, he worships in these pagan temples and stuff, and I'm his bodyguard. So would it be cool if I go into the pagan temples with my boss, but in my heart, I'm still just worshiping your God? And sometimes he bows down and I have to kind of bow down with him, but it's just me, my body. It's not going to be my heart. And Elisha goes, no problem. See, a lot of times we get superstitious about things like that. Sometimes traveling with Christians, if there's a temple there, you know, people are like, oh, I don't want to go in there. Their gods aren't real. They're pretend. You don't have to feel like, oh, this is spooky. It's just, where's your heart? Are you worshiping God? And for him, he goes, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And Elisha goes, yeah, no problem. I get it. It's your job. Don't worry about that. So he goes away thrilled. He's just had a conversion. He has a new God to serve, and his life's starting over. Well, as he heads out, beginning with verse 20 there, Elisha's servant Gehazi starts thinking, why did you turn down that gold and silver? And those were some pretty cool outfits, man. Syrian clothes are cool. And so he decides, I'm going to go after him and just cash in on a little bit of that. So he chases Naaman, and Naaman sees him, and he gets down off his chariot, and he goes, hey, what's the matter? Everything okay? And he goes, yeah, everything's fine. But, you know, after Elisha told you that he didn't want any of your money or your clothes, a couple of guys, young seminary students, came into town, and they could really use a couple outfits of clothes. They look a mess. And maybe a talent, you know, a bag of silver would be cool. And he goes, no problem, take two talents. Take two bags, two outfits. Great. Man, I owe you guys everything. So Gehazi took the stuff, went and stashed it at home, and went back to work. Elisha says to him, Gehazi, where did you go just now? And Gehazi goes, what? I didn't go anywhere. And Elisha says, don't you realize that when you went after that chariot, my heart was going with you? Elisha was spooky. He could just tell. He just knew. And he goes, because of what you did, I hope you enjoy those clothes and those talents, because you're going to now have leprosy. Naaman's leprosy is coming on you and on your descendants. Ooh, that's kind of harsh. This was obviously a big deal to Elisha. He was saying, I wasn't going to profit from a heathen who's becoming a follower of God, but I don't want you to do it in my name either. I don't want you taking advantage. This isn't about getting rich. This isn't about profiting. This is about life-changing realities. And because of it, your life's going to change in ways you can't even imagine. This seems kind of harsh, but it's what happened. So you have an amazing story. You have a story of a guy who's from another country, doesn't really know God. He's a good guy. Listens to a slave girl, goes down to Israel, gets healed of his leprosy, heads back, gives a little bit of stuff to Gehazi, including his leprosy. Maybe it was in the clothes, I don't know. But that's it. That's the story. Now, the Bible tells us that these stories are here because they have something to do with how we live our lives. These stories that happened thousands of years ago, and they're true stories, but we should be able to look at them and see, okay, what does this have to do with me? How does this affect the way that I live? And so the reason we go through the story is to then say, so what? What does this tell me? If I get leprosy, go to Samaria, I mean, what is God trying to say here?
We'll draw some practical application from this wonderful Bible story in just a moment as The Balanced Word with Dave Rolfe continues. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. As promised, here's Pastor Dave with one of the many lessons we can take away from today's Bible story.
I see several things in this story that definitely apply to the way we live our lives. The first one is which you got to be aware of preconceived notions. See, for Naaman, he had an idea of how he thought God was going to work. And he almost missed being healed because he thought that the prophet would have to be there personally and would have to wave his hand and would have to say the right words, and then he would be healed. He knew that's the way magic worked in Syria, but obviously their magic hadn't worked, but he figures, when I come to Israel, that's what healing is going to look like. But God chose to do it in a different sort of way, and he almost missed the opportunity because of preconceived notions. Preconceived notions are those things that we presume or we assume, and we build a framework around which everything that happens should fit into that pattern. There's a writer, Mary Brown, who said, preconceived notions are the locks on the door to wisdom. And it's so true. If we are going to discover wisdom, we have to eliminate all of our preconceived notions. Now, you know, in every field, we have preconceived notions, patterns that we expect to find. In science, you can build a framework by making certain assumptions, and then you test your hypothesis based on, you know, the evidence that's there. So in the past, it was thought that certainly the universe revolves around the Earth because it just feels like that. It seems like that. So they were making the preconceived notion that the Earth was the center of the universe. They could even find Bible verses that would seem to support it. But gradually, when people like Copernicus and others said, no, it's not, we're actually revolving around the sun, and who knows what's out beyond there. Oh, people flipped out. They thought they were ready to try him for heresy because he was going against our preconceived notions. But in science, it's so important. to not assume a bunch of things and then try to interpret in light of that. I think it's the same way with us and how we interpret the scriptures. We need to be careful that we not bring our preconceived notions and interpret everything in light of that. You then have to start bending data in order to fit your preconceived notions. And so, and we do that in all fields of study, really.
More about the leper who is healed next time on The Balanced Word. Read ahead here in 2 Kings chapter 5 and join us then. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.